I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Election Day is right around the corner, and Missouri's race for U.S. Senator is one of the most closely watched in the nation. With 19 years of experience in Congress, Senator Roy Blunt's career is considerable. His campaign for re-election hasn't been easy, though. The Republican incumbent faces fierce opposition against his Democratic rival. We'll ask the senator what he plans to accomplish with a second term and find out his position on the Affordable Care Act, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and firearms regulation. And we'll bring you the weekend to-do list with Brian McTavish. It's One-on-One with Roy Blunt as we get you up to date after this hour's news. Missouri Senator Roy Blunt is seeking a second term in the U.S. Senate. He served in the House for seven terms, working as the majority whip and acting majority leader. He's a former Missouri Secretary of State. That's the same position now held by his opponent, Democrat Jason Kander. And here's a little-known fact. Roy Blunt once served as president of Southwest Baptist University in Missouri, which happens to be his alma mater. Senator, welcome back. So good to have you here.
Good to be with you, Steve. Thanks for letting me come by today.
You want a second term. Why?
Well, you know, I think I've been able to get some things started in the Senate that, frankly, I don't think would have happened if I hadn't been there when I began.
Things like what?
Well, like health care research, 12 years of zero increase in health care research until I started to chair the committee that funds that. And for 2 years in a row, we've made a big advance in health care research, critically important to families, critically important, frankly, to taxpayers, and also critically important as health care changes. The country that figures out how to do things in new and different ways is going to be the country that has the economic opportunities. We're very well positioned in our state to be part of that. Mental health equity. Senator Stabenow and I got a bill passed, Excellence in Mental Health. We're going to have eight pilot states, maybe as many as 23 next year.
Mental health has been a real priority for
it,
you.
It has.
Why is that?
You know, I think it's important. We've always been relatively forward-leaning on that. When I was a state official, a first Republican elected Secretary of State in 52 years, it was a guy named Jack Stapleton who ran the Daily Dunklin Democrat in Kennett, Missouri, who had taken a big interest in mental health. And he said, he came to me one day and said, Roy, nobody really talks about this, that it's so important, so critical to so many families. I'd like you to take an interest in it. And I listened to that, and I have taken an interest in it over the years. I think excellence in mental health, if you talk to the mental health community all over the country, they'll say, many of them, that this is the biggest step forward in mental health in 50 years. I don't think it would have happened if I hadn't been there. It wouldn't have happened also if I hadn't been able to figure out how to work with the other side to have a bill that both Democrats and Republicans could support. The economic opportunity issues that are out there that are particularly good for our state, where world food demand is going to double in the next 35 or 40 years. And somebody needs to be advocating for how we take maximum advantage of that great challenge and that great opportunity. There's a long list, Steve, and I'm sure we're going to cover some of that today. The Victims of Child Abuse Act. We have 22 senators in our state. Senator Coons, a Democrat from Connecticut, and I were able to get that law extended, even for reasons that neither of us have ever really understood. The Justice Department didn't think it was important to continue to have the federal encouragement for those centers where kids who are the victim of a crime or the witness to a crime get to go get that forensic interview out of the way for prosecutors and begin to get right on with the healing process.
I want to ask you about what voters are saying. They want less dysfunction in Washington. They want to get things done, as you're talking about here. A Kansas City Star editorial just said this about you, Senator. Even in the era of Tea Party fanatics, Roy Blunt has demonstrated an ability to work effectively with Democrats on major issues, such as increased funding for medical research, as you're talking about here, improving roads, bridges, ports, and underground water and sewer lines. But what's your own sense, Senator? How have you done enough to end dysfunction? What else needs to happen?
Well, you know, I think if you look at what we've been talking about in the campaign, it's relatively unique in the country for any candidate on either side to say, here are a handful of things that, one, took Democrats and Republicans working together, also understanding that there are some things that you're not going to agree on, but the ability to reach out and find the things you do agree on is really important. You know, in our state, the transportation, critically important to us where we live, both Missouri and Kansas, we're at the transportation intersection of the country, river, highway, and railroad. How do we take advantage of that? Five-year highway bill that I worked for, but in that bill and in the short-term extensions of the highway bill, Senator Casey from Pennsylvania, a Democrat, and I did things like the bridge program that in our state that I think has more bridges, local government bridges, than any other state in the country. Mm-hmm. They couldn't take care of those bridges unless that bridge sharing program continued. It was never in the basic base bill, Democrat and Republican working to be sure it was in the final bill.
What about Interstate 70? This state desperately needs to rebuild the major artery in this state. How can the federal government, help with something like that?
You know, I think the most important thing that the federal government has done there, and I told the Missouri General Assembly this when I talked to them in January. Is, look, a five-year highway bill matters to the country, but it matters more to us because it's one of our competitive advantages. And I said, this is an opportunity for you to look at that five-year bill and figure out how you can maximize that overall blueprint so that our state has all the benefit we could possibly have. This is always a partnership. The federal government saying what the partnership on their side is going to look like helps a lot. Under President Obama, there had been, prior to the Republican control of both the Senate and the House 2 years ago, there had been 37 short-term extensions of the highway bill. I don't think there's a similar number anywhere in the history of the federal road program. You can't build roads and bridges 2 years and 6 months and 90 days at a time.
Yeah.
So looking at that, and I'm continuing to encourage our members of the General Assembly, look at the plan that's out there. If it's a six-month plan, by the time you could comply with it or try to pass legislation, that plan would be over. A five-year plan really matters. We just got in the water infrastructure bill some very specific targeted things for the Kansas City levee system. And those are the kinds of things that if you understand our state, whether it's the levee in St. Joseph, where I'll be later today, or the levee here, being sure that the funding is authorized so that you can advocate then to be sure that it's also then available.
Missouri Senator Roy Blunt is my guest. Your opponent points to something else, and that's your refusal to even meet with Merrick Garland. That's President Obama's pick for the Supreme Court. Why wouldn't you sit down with him and have a conversation?
Well, you know, I actually know him. He's a perfectly nice man. He has a, in my view, a perfectly bad record as a judge. And the bigger issue here really is, should you fill a vacancy, a lifetime vacancy in the court that occurs within the last year of a president's term? Hasn't happened since 1932.
But he's still the president.
But the long-term history of the country, and remember, I'm a history teacher, not a lawyer.
That's right.
The long-term history of the country is that these late appointments are almost never approved by the Senate. The Senate is an equal partner in this process of whether somebody gets on the court for the rest of their life or not. 1888 was the last time there was an election year vacancy that was filled when there was a division between the parties that controlled the White House and the parties that controlled the Senate. This is well within the way we've always looked at these appointments. Voters get a chance to be heard. I think they should be heard, and they will be heard a week from next Tuesday.
Well, critics say if Hillary Clinton wins the presidency, you're going to wind up with a more liberal judge than Merrick Garland ever would be.
Well, and maybe a younger judge. I mean, the biggest advantage Merrick Garland has in terms of
is in his 60s.
On the court is 62 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But the voters have a right here to be heard on this lifetime appointment. They are going to be heard, and we'll see. That's not necessarily all upside for what I'd like to see happen in the court, but I think it's totally appropriate that you listen to voters. And not moving forward with judicial and Supreme Court nominations goes back to the very founding of the country, where the Congress would often, they didn't have hearings in those days, they often just would decide we're not going to hold a vote till the next Congress is here or the next president's elected. And I think John Tyler nominated 9 people to fill 2 vacancies on the court, most of whom were never dealt with.
You know, the Republican nominee for president, Donald Trump, has released a list of what he calls conservative judges that he would appoint to the court. Can you support the names on his list?
I like the names on his list. I particularly like Ray Grunder from our state. It's a good list. I really think that when you look at the potential of a Trump-Pence administration, the 2 most significant things that Donald Trump has put on the table are Mike Pence and that list of a dozen judges that would give you an indication of what that government, what that administration would be likely to look at.
So given that, how enthusiastic are you about Donald Trump as your party's nominee?
Well, I think there are real problems in the country that have been created over the last 8 years, starting with out-of-control regulators, the rolling disaster of Obamacare. The foreign policy is terrible. I think Mrs. Clinton represents a 3rd Obama term, and I'm not for a 3rd Obama term, so I'm supportive of Trump and Pence.
But so many other Republicans have walked away from Donald Trump, Senator, given all the things that he said and alleged to have done to women. Why don't you walk away from him just on that basis alone?
Well, you know, they have to make their own decisions about that, but, you know, it's not...
How about your decision?
Well, my decision, there are an equal number of things you could walk away from Mrs. Clinton on. There are 2 choices here to make. I'm not for her. I'm not for somebody that says half of the people that support Donald Trump, and maybe even who knows how many percentage of people that support me, are deplorable and despicable and unredeemable. Mm-hmm. That's pretty harsh language, too.
You know, on Facebook, Connie Schidler wrote this to me last night. What's Senator Blunt's position on the statements Donald Trump made about women?
Absolutely unacceptable.
Where does the country go if Hillary Clinton is elected president? What's your fear? What's your biggest fear about what a Clinton presidency might represent?
Well, I do think that the biggest obstacle to economic opportunity right now for families are thoughtless and out-of-control regulators. I don't see that changing in a Clinton administration. More jobs, less government. We need, is the way I think we ought to be looking at the future. And we need every government regulation we absolutely have to have. Mm-hmm. We don't need any government regulations we don't absolutely have to have. The power rule from the EPA that in our state and in Kansas as well would double the utility bill and 10 or 12 years, struggling families are hurt by that, job opportunities are hurt by that. I don't see the Clinton administration moving to reverse that, and they'll do all they can to defend their ability to continue to move forward. With the same with the so-called Waters of the U.S. rule, where the Obama administration has decided that all of the water in the country is navigable water. 99.7% of our state would be covered by that rule for anything that deals with water. Every building permit, mowing the roadside ditches, perhaps what farmers could
but
put on their fields.
But are they going to back away from that?
Why would they back away from that? I have no reason to believe that they would back away from that. It is a ridiculous position to take.
That's my point.
We have actually put it on the president's desk to back away from it, and he vetoed that. There's no reason to believe that Mrs. Clinton would back away from that.
Let's turn to your opponent, Democrat Jason Kander, Senator, who is giving you a run for your money here today. Your campaign says he'd be a rubber stamp for Hillary Clinton, a rubber stamp for more Obamacare, higher taxes, and liberal Supreme Court judges. Tell me about that, because he says he takes some positions that reflect his independence. You know, a balanced budget amendment, for instance, that an idea that some Democrats oppose. His opposition to the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement as another example. How do you see him?
Well, I think his views that he purports to have today appear to be in many cases dramatically the opposite of what his views were when he was voting in the Missouri General Assembly.
For example?
Well, Obamacare. He voted over and over again to support Obamacare for us to do implementing things that our state didn't want to do.
But he still supports it. He wants to change it. He still supports it, he says.
Well, you know, and he said when he said until he started running for the Senate, he was for a government option, which Mrs. Clinton is for. Now he says he's not for a government option. I think he is for whatever he thinks would allow him to get elected. You know, I've cast a number of votes in the Senate and in the Congress. I think I've been very willing to be out there fighting for what I am for. And frankly, people who want to take different positions on different issues based on what office they're working for. Jason Kander's run for 3 political offices in 7 years. His 2 terms in the General Assembly, he didn't get a single bill passed. His time as Secretary of State, it seems to me he's totally uninterested in the Secretary of State's office. Judges have reversed his ballot language, saying it was misleading.
That's unusual, though.
Oh, it's very unusual. I was Secretary of State. I never had my ballot language reversed based on the fact it was misleading. 2 elections in August, 2 primary elections had to be held over again because the judges decided that state election officials weren't paying attention to the absentee ballot laws.
But again, those are oftentimes local election judges that where the issue is not so much the Secretary of State.
Well, I think the Secretary of State, Jason Kander, wants to be the chief election official of the state unless there's a problem. Then he wants somebody else to be responsible for that
problem.
But
you had similar issues when you were Secretary of State.
You know, I've actually looked at a couple of those issues, and I handled them dramatically differently. There was a similar issue to some of these in 1991 and 92, and that sounds like a long time ago because it was, but if you go back and look at how we acted at that time when I was Secretary of State, how our office acted, it is dramatically different than how his office acted.
So the mistake Jason Kander has made is what then, in a nutshell?
I think the mistake he's made is not being interested in the job he has and being interested in the job that comes next.
This looks like a year that's shaping up to be not so friendly to longtime incumbents. Your Democratic opponents are pounding you on TV. They say you've been a Washington senator for 20 years, and that's long enough. Why aren't they right?
Well, you know, you and I started this talking about a handful of things and more, and I think we could get to a triple handful of things that have happened since I've been in the Senate just the last 6 years. That wouldn't have happened if I hadn't been there. And, you know, I spend time listening to Missourians, fighting for Missourians, not intimidated when the Kansas City Star, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch says you're spending way too much time explaining why Obamacare won't work. The failure of Obamacare is totally predictable. Didn't mean that we couldn't have done things to change the healthcare system and still don't need to do that. But I'm willing to fight those battles. In a more than 1,600 events in our state in the 6 years I've been in the Senate.
Well, should Obamacare be wiped out completely, or should it be fixed? You keep the basic outlines of the program and you just fix it up, Senator.
I don't know that you can keep the basic outlines of the program, but it has to be fixed. Mm-hmm. You know, the president
says he can't fix it because Republican senators would just knock it off, take it off the books if they had a chance to do it.
Well, you know what? The president lesson that we all should learn from what happened with Obamacare was what happens when one party controls everything. Last time the Democrats had the White House, 60 votes in the Senate and the House of Representatives, you got Obamacare, you're enabling all kinds of regulations. They don't happen. The Dodd-Frank bill trying to treat small banks like they were big banks.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't think Missourians or Americans want to see that repeated. Now, there have never been 60 popularly elected Republican senators, so it's unlikely that our side will ever get that kind of authority. But you don't have to look back very many years to see what happens when one side decides they can do whatever they want to do. And one of the big lessons to learn out of the Obamacare disaster is if you're going to do something that big, you have to do whatever is necessary to reach out and get buy-in from the other side. If you're going to impact everybody's health care and 16% of the economy, one, you need to do it in a way that you have more than just one side supporting the idea. And two, you need to also be very aware of the unintended consequences of what you're likely to do.
Missouri Senator Roy Blunt is my guest. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. We've got him for about 10 more minutes if you want to call. Option number two is to tweet us at KCUR up to date. Senator, if you just put an earpiece up to your ear here, I'm going to play a little bit of what Jason Kander said about you last week when he was here in the studio. Let's listen to it, and then you can respond.
Senator Blunt really has, after 20 years in Washington, he is at the point now where his constituents have become the lobbyists who he spends his time with and his political party. Well, he's just not the same person who was a history teacher or was the Greene County clerk or even had my job when he was Secretary of State. You know, he actually, believe it or not, Senator Blunt used to be a reformer. Senator Blunt has been protecting the status quo because it works great for him and for his family and for his special interest donors.
Senator, what do you say to that?
Well, again, I think we've covered quite a bit of that already this morning. When I started chairing the committee that funds education and labor and health and human services, that subcommittee hadn't had a bipartisan bill in 7 years. Second year I chaired the committee, we had a bipartisan bill that eliminated more than two dozen programs that weren't working, reduced programs that weren't as effective, spent money on things that solved problems that Americans and particularly Missourians are concerned about. You know, again, I've been in every county of our state three times in the last 6 years. No senator in the history of our state has spent more time in the entire state and all over the state than I have.
I actually think
I'm almost exactly who I've always been. You know, my mom and dad were dairy farmers. My first job teaching high school history was the first time anybody in my family got a job that you had to be a college graduate to get the job, because I was the first college graduate in my family. My grandfather's last job was to be the janitor at the building where I started teaching high school history. I think it's harder to change who you are than Jason Kander apparently thinks. He's pretty changeable. You know, he's born in Kansas, told a St. Louis public radio reported the other day. He said he was a native Missourian. He has just one story after another that advances the new Jason Kander. I think that one of those stories just made up is that somehow I'm a guy who doesn't care about our state. I am in our state all the time, and you and I both know that.
Now, his last point about the special interest and in working for them, you're getting hit again this campaign cycle for moves you made back in 2002, which involved you trying to push through pro-tobacco legislation while dating a Philip Morris lobbyist and cashing campaign checks from Philip Morris executives. What about that? What's your side of that story?
You know, my side of that story is there was a letter that came out from the majority leader when that story first emerged. It said we were all for that. It eventually, by the way, became law, the so-called PACT Act, trying to prevent terrorists from having one of their modes of finance, selling illegal cigarettes that nobody was paying taxes on. And it's the law today. So the majority leader, Dick Armey, was very clear at the time that he was for that, that we had every reason to believe that the Senate Judiciary Committee was in favor of adding that to the bill. Didn't get added to the bill because it didn't get added. Just, it's one of those things that never happened.
But PolitiFact
criticized for
looked at this and concluded this, Senator, when you date and later marry a Philip Morris lobbyist, when you have a son who works as a tobacco lobbyist, when you accept hefty sums of campaign money from tobacco executives, and then you add an 11th hour provision that some view as pro-big tobacco, you've left yourself open to the kind of criticism raised in these different
ads.
But
it wasn't my provision. It wasn't my provision. It was a provision that there that I would have, that eventually becomes part of the federal law. That is putting that big package together after 9/11. And for the reasons you just mentioned, I was easily blamed for that provision. Wasn't my provision, eventually became law. You know, my wife's worked for Kraft Foods for about 15 years. She's one of 2,000 Missourians now. That works for that company. She happens to be responsible for all of their government affairs all over the world, doesn't lobby the Senate. My son Andy, who you mentioned, is, you know, grew up in the state capital, grew up in Jefferson City. He is a lobbyist, but he doesn't lobby any on any federal issues. And I don't know what he lobbies on, but I know he doesn't lobby in Washington, D.C.
Let's go to some phone calls here for Senator Roy Blunt, who's in the studio with me here. Let's go to Mark. Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead. You're on with Senator Blunt, Mark.
I wanted to respond to that comment that they refused to consider nomination for the Supreme Court to be fair to voters. I'm offended by that. I voted for Obama in the last election, and I consider it's very unfair to me. The American people selected Obama for president, and you're not considering his nomination.
What about that, Senator?
Well, I just think, again, I think that's well within the way these nominations have always been dealt with and will, I suspect, continue to be dealt with. Certainly, people on the other side, even when there was no vacancy in the last year of the Bush administration, the apparently rising Democratic leader in the Senate, Chuck Schumer, said, just to give you a notice in advance, if there's a vacancy on the Supreme Court next year, we're not going to let you fill it. That's very much in the history of the and traditions of the country. I've been willing to work with the administration when we could. Lifetime appointments are different than other appointments. And the original Constitutional Convention, the first proposal was that the president will nominate, and unless the Senate objects, that person will go on the court. But the people who were drafting the Constitution said, no, we want that to be we want the Senate to have more responsibility than of who goes on the court. The president can nominate, and the Senate has to agree. That'll be the case with the next Senate as well. Harry Reid said just the other day, even though he won't be the leader, he said, and by the way, if we elect a president and we control the Senate, we're going to change the law, if the Republicans resist at all, to where 51 senators, not 60 senators, will put somebody on the court for life. If Mrs. Clinton's president and Republicans control the Senate, we'll still have that 60-vote majority that requires the president to move more to the center than the president would otherwise move.
Let's move to a different issue, guns. It's been an important issue in this campaign. Lots of TV ads about it. Jason Kander assembling a gun while blindfolded. Let's listen to what Jason Kander says about his stance on guns.
You know, Senator Blunt does keep talking about his political rating. And, you know, what I said at the debate, what I'll say now is that I would put my Army marksmanship badge up against, you know, a political rating any day of the week. The point of the ad and the point that I'm making on the issue in the campaign is that, look, I support the Second Amendment. I'm a gun owner myself, learned how to use a gun in the Army. And I just believe that part of protecting the Second Amendment is making sure that criminals and suspected terrorists don't get the same right to buy a gun that Senator Blunt and I get, or that you and I get.
He's talking about background checks. Can you support background checks?
I have supported background checks. What I don't support is a list that the government can put you on that you don't have any appeal process to get off of. That's not who we are. There are governments in the world that on their own make lists that you may or may not know about, and things happen to you and your family because you're on that list. You have to have an appeal to prove that you're on the list. Now, these are not, and, you know, Jason Kander in the legislature got an F from the NRA. Fewer than 10% of the members got an F. You had to work hard to get an F. This group, it's a big defender of the Second Amendment in our country and is really focused on that. I have an A with them. He has an F. He can on his own decide that somehow he has a really good grade defending the Second Amendment, but nobody else believes that.
So what would you support? You know, so many Americans concerned about guns and these mass shootings across the country. What would you support, Senator, when it comes to limiting access to guns? Again, because so many folks are so worried about it these days.
Well, Steve, I'd support enforcing the laws we have more vigorously. And in states where we've seen real tragedies, they're the states often with the most most stringent laws in this regard. I think you have to be very careful not to begin to take people's rights away, whether they're the First Amendment rights to free speech and religious freedom or the Second Amendment rights that people have under the Constitution.
A final issue, again, that's so much in the news, immigration. Jason Kander supports amnesty and a path to citizenship for those here illegally now. Where do you stand on that
issue? I think there are three different problems to be solved in this area. One is how do you secure the border? Two is what are the legitimate workforce needs of the country? And three is what do you do with people who came here or stayed here illegally? And I think you have to secure the border first. I think people will be very forward-leaning in solving those other two problems if they feel like the government has first met its responsibility to secure the border.
Do you want to build that wall, the Donald Trump wall?
I have. We've been building that wall for about 10 years. I've been there. I've visited the border. I've talked to Border Patrol agents, who, by the way, that group has actually endorsed Donald Trump. Securing the border is a legitimate responsibility of the government. The comprehensive solution is not going to be the way to solve this problem. And if you take those three problems, Steve, the right, say, 218 members in the House to secure the border in the best possible way are probably not the right 218 members to try to figure out what do you do with people who came or stayed illegally.
Well, what do you do with those folks?
Well, once you
Donald
secure
Trump
the border,
wants to ship them all home.
I think once you secure the border, and I think he's got a different view of that than he may have initially had. That's not going to happen. But whether you let them have the same access to citizenship that people have been standing in line in their home countries is a very different question. If that's what amnesty means, I'm not for amnesty.
I just want to be real clear here. So the folks who are here illegally now, what do you want to do with those folks?
Well, I want people to look at how to solve that once they're confident that the government has met its responsibility to secure the border.
So that comes first, and then you want...
That comes first, and that's when you're going to have the better public discussion of what do you do with people who came illegally or stayed illegally, and anything short of that will not produce the kind of result that we would want to have.
Is your instinct, though, to send them home?
I think it's unlikely that you could physically do that. And you've got many people here who have a work record, a family record. You see them at church. You see them at school. For whatever reason, they have wound up here in ways that they may not have anticipated. But people will want to deal with that in the right kind of way. But they won't want to deal with that unless they feel like the government has met its responsibility to secure the border. So I'm not for amnesty. I'm for securing the border first, and then I'm for dealing with those other two questions as specific individual challenges that deserve a specific individual debate after the border's been secured.
Well, I'd be a lousy politician because I've kept you 3 minutes and 16 seconds longer than I promised that I would. Missouri Senator Roy Blunt, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks,
nice to have you
good
here.
Good to be with you.
So sorry we couldn't get to all our callers today. Andre, Sam, Brandon, and others just didn't have time to get there. Again, appreciate Senator Blunt sticking around for an extra few minutes here. Time for a break. When we come back, Brian McTavish will be here. We'll talk a little bit more about this U.S. Senate race. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. On yesterday's program, we looked at sports injuries in children and how they affect development. You can find that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, our film critics are back. They'll review the latest independent documentary and foreign films showing in local theaters. Well, joining me now is KCUR's Peggy Lowe. We're going to talk about the two interviews we've had in the past week. We've had both major party candidates for the U.S. Senate here, Jason Kander. We just finished a conversation with Roy Blunt. Peggy Lowe, welcome. It's always nice to have you here.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, we've had both these conversations here. Give me just a rough sense where this race is, at least what are the polls saying, Peggy? It's obviously become a very important race nationally.
Very important race. It is officially a toss-up and has been for several weeks. Real Clear Politics this morning said that Roy Blunt is ahead of Jason Kander by just 1 point. You know, and statistically, that's obviously in the margin of error.
He told me point blank he's confident he's going to be there. He's going to win it.
Yeah, he keeps saying that. And I believe that Kander would privately say that.
This is Roy Blunt I'm talking about saying he thinks he's going to win it. Yeah.
Right. Senator Blunt was just here. Yeah, he does believe he's going to win it. And you know what? There is some precedent for that. Remember when we were covering the Orman-Pat Roberts race? Greg Orman in Kansas had challenged the GOP incumbent. And it was a toss-up going into the election.
That's right.
And then ultimately, Roberts won by 10 points. It wasn't even hard.
A lot of folks just couldn't bring themselves to vote for someone maybe not as well-known as Greg Orman and an independent, and they went with the safer choice, I guess, in some senses.
Right, and I think there's a lot of parallels here. You know, people were excited about Orman. He was an outsider. He seemed really interesting. He had this business of his own. But it came, when, you know, push came down to shove, Roberts won in Kansas. So, but what's at stake nationally, too, is obviously really large. And this is why Democrats are dumping so much money into this race. The latest NPR analysis of it says Democrats have successfully expanded the map enough so that they have multiple paths to the five seats they need for an outright majority in the Senate, or four if Hillary Clinton wins the presidency, which also looks increasingly likely. Republicans would need a near-perfect night on election night. So it looks good for Democrats as far as gaining back the Senate. And certainly Jason Kander is a part of the Democratic Party's strategy.
You're just talking to Senator Blunt today, this notion of his support for Donald Trump. Obviously, Trump has put a lot of Republicans in a very difficult position, given his controversial nature, so many of the controversial comments he's made over the months, including those most recently about women and the accusations now that are flying. He's in a tough place when it comes to Donald Trump.
He is truly between a rock and a hard place, to use a cliche. I mean, he has endorsed Trump, and then he has to be out on the campaign trail basically defending the indefensible. And when reporters have asked him about Trump and things like you asked today, for instance, the women question, the deport all the illegals question, he has started saying, I'm not even going to answer it. He basically brushes off reporters, which, of course, Kander's campaign is trying to also use. I get emails, I swear, on the hour from the Democrats talking about how Blunt has done that. So you got to give him, you know, sort of... I don't know. I guess I feel for Roy Blunt on that score. But it's also hard to say I endorse Trump and be running as an insider. Mm-hmm. That's really not working. I mean, Blunt just got a really, his rolling the dice on this year was a tough one. When voters are saying drain the swamp on the hashtag, it's hard to run against that.
He may have made some news today, Senator Blunt did, in his response on immigration, where right at the end he said, when I asked him point blank about what do you do with the folks who are here illegally now, his inclination, he said, he wants to secure the border first, but his inclination is to think that you can't send them all home. That task is probably just too great for the federal government to manage. At least that's the sense I got from his answer there.
That's exactly what I was thinking too, Steve, because I was listening thinking, okay, I have to do spots this afternoon for the newscast and tomorrow. And so what kind of news am I going to pull out? And until then, till about 20, almost 30 minutes into your interview, you asked him point blank, Trump says, ship them all home. Would you do that? He says, not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he would want to look at those proposals. He believes that there should be reform. So he certainly... left Trump on that question.
Well, great news minds think alike when it comes to what we think the news is there, right?
Don't we, Kraske?
Absolutely. Not
Amen.
Bad. That's KCUR's Peggy Lowe. Peggy, thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Coming up next, Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list. Well, KCUR's Brian McTavish is here. He talks and writes about pop culture, joins us here each week to talk about cool stuff to do on your weekend. And who do we have here?
Hey, direct, well, maybe not direct, yeah. maybe not since childhood, but the voice you are now listening to, yes. besides mine and yours,
yes, the
belongs
voice.
To...
Tyler Farr.
It does. See how yeah. we work so well together there?
Not bad.
And
not
he
bad.
Is from Garden City, Missouri.
Didn't Garden City, Missouri or Kansas?
It says Garden City right here.
Okay.
Could be a misprint.
Could be.
Hit the Google. Anyway, it's the American Royal World Series of Barbecue, and this fella is going to be singing a concert Saturday night as part of the festivities.
Sounds
it's
like
the,
fun.
Oh, yeah. Definitely sounds like fun. Get this.
It's in a new location.
Well, it is. That's really the news. We buried the lead, didn't
Big
we?
Big new location.
Oh, yeah. It's at the Kansas Speedway.
Wow.
Out there by the Legends, right? In
Everything's
KCK.
Going to Kansas these days.
Oh, well, is that good or bad?
Well, I'm not saying.
That's right.
I'm just saying that things are changing.
Things are changing.
Yeah.
Including this year at the Kansas Speedway for the 2016 American Royal World Series of Barbecue. Last year, it was at Arrowhead Stadium.
Wow.
And the year before that, and many years before that, it was just down in the West Bottom. So, yes, isn't there something in the news recently I saw on KCOR's website about maybe the American Royal
Royals
itself?
Going to Kansas, yeah.
Oh, my goodness gracious
there you
me.
Go.
Well, anyway, have some fun eating and trying and whiffing a lot of wonderful barbecue. Here's a little fact lot I wanted to share regarding Mr. Farr. Person we're listening to singing so sweetly, he actually spent a summer on the road at the age of 16 in George Jones' touring ensemble. He didn't play.
Where do you find these
He
things?
Didn't play, but his
Is this
father...
True?
It's true. His father played lead guitar in George
wow.
Jones, country icon
wow.
George Jones' band. So,
there
this guy
go.
Comes by it honest. Have a great time. Lots of stuff to do for the kids. There's a poker tournament tonight. Go get some barbecue on.
Who do we have here?
I call that blues rock that knows how to go pop.
Ellie
okay?
King.
Ellie King.
I've never heard of that. I don't know these people
well,
anymore. What's happened to me? I used to know these people.
Well, you know who you know.
Yes.
And you have your reasons.
Yes.
8 o'clock, Friday night, Arvis Bank Theater at the Midland.
Wow.
Ellie King, she really puts it to it and knows how to do it. And who is she, you say? Well, does that sound like the daughter of former Saturday Night Live cast member Rob Schneider?
Oh.
Does
okay.
it? That's who that
it
is.
Does. It does. That's exactly who that is.
See, you knew all along. You're just yeah. funning me. Ellie King began as a child actress. Her very first screen appearance, and she still acts every now and then, but now it's a music thing for her. She showed up in the 1999 comedy, raunchy comedy, Deuce Bigelow,
Ooh.
Male Gigolo, thanks yes. to Dad's efforts. He was the star of that fine American film. Anyway, as a musician, King has found her own frothy fun, shall we say, as a blues rocker. As a matter of fact, a couple years ago, she had a Grammy-nominated hit, top 10 hit on Billboard's chart called X's and O's.
Wow.
She's got plenty of attitude. She actually had the song.
I hear that.
She actually had the song at the end of the Ghostbusters reboot this year over the credits. It's called Good Girls, and she's not good, but she's so bad she's good. Go.
Be sure to see Brian's 6 zesty things to do yeah. in Kansas City this weekend. Just go to KCUR.org. I recognize this is homegrown stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Who is it?
Oh, yeah. It is Tech N9ne himself.
My goodness.
That's
Tech
right.
N9ne.
Kansas City's
the
most,
one and only.
Well, he's very famous now.
He is very famous.
He is our hometown hero, so you yes, can expect the fans to be out.
Just behind home plate at World Series games. That's how big he is last year.
Oh, really?
I saw him
Who
there.
Was behind home plate last night?
I don't know.
Oh, the guy. You know,
Who,
what's his name? The famous
guy?
Chicago actor. He was in High Fidelity.
Yeah, okay.
No, we're blanking. This is great. Yeah. Live radio. Anyway, Tech N9ne.
John Cusick.
Thank you very yeah. much. Host with the most.
Yeah.
So famous people, you should sit behind home plate soon, sometime soon.
Yeah, when's that going to happen?
Whenever you say.
I hope next week.
Yeah. Well, oh, it's too bad about the Royals. Anyway, KC Rap Hero performs his Fright Edition, his Halloween Eve concert, 8 o'clock, Sunday night, Arvis Bank Theater at the Midland. Go back to the Midland after checking out Ellie King. Sunday night, Tech N9ne and crew.
Thank you.
goodness, what do we got here?
This scared the pants off me, and I was just in my sweatpants.
That's
I think
serious.
When I was a kid, okay. When I saw The Phantom of the Opera, the 1929 version starring the Man of a Thousand Faces,
yes,
Lon Chaney, I lost it. It is so scary. It is so chilling. And you can do it, too. You can catch the screening of the 1929 silent screen horror classic with live solo organ accompaniment at 7 o'clock tonight.
Wow.
If you go to the symphony's website... it's at the Kauffman Center, by the way. If you go, they say, call us. Mm-hmm. So there might just be scattered tickets left. But, hey, come on.
This will blow you out the
door. This will blow you out the door. He had such a... Lon Chaney was the Man of a Thousand Faces because he made himself up. He was the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. You know, that was all of his creation.
I did not
self-applied. Check out the 1957 biopic Man of a Thousand Faces starring James Cagney.
But he won't be there tonight, though. Tonight's the point.
Oh, he'll be there.
Okay.
He's there up on the screen. When she takes that mask off, ooh, not good. And I know that you would be here right now if I could have let you know somehow. I guess every rose has its thorn. Just like
like that song. Always have.
Come on, get your lighter out.
Yeah, not bad.
Or get your phone out or whatever they
whatever
do now.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's Bret Michaels. He's singing the song that his most famous ditty from his old glam metal big-haired band Poison. That's Every Rose
Has
Its Thorn, which I guess we'd simply have to accept. Aren't there some? Don't they make thornless roses?
Oh, they probably, yes.
Oh, well, so much for that. Anyway, the former Poison frontman keeps on rocking. 8 o'clock Saturday night at the Ameristar Casino. Now, I don't think he'll have on the eye makeup anymore.
Well,
he might. But he wears the cowboy hat now. He's kind of a sideways country singer. Although, if you think about this, the chord progression... I mean, this song, even going back 25 years, kind of sounds country.
Yes, it does.
It kind of does a little bit. But, you know, if this isn't enough for you, Bret Michaels might do Girls on Bars or Talk Dirty to Me or any number of other highfalutin non-family favorites.
That's Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list.
No,
thanks,
it's yours.
Buddy.
It's yours.
It's yours.
It's ours.
It's ours.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow, the film critics are back. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, Ryan Hennessy, and Corinne Dorian. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date. He found somebody new, and that I never meant that much to you. To hear that tears me up inside, and to see you cuts me.